It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. A new report finding a repeal of Obamacare could leave 230,000 Iowans without health care coverage. We'll be covering that in our second half hour. But first of all, after a career of over 40 years working in the field of corrections, Nick Ludwig is retiring as the warden of the Iowa State Penitentiary in Fort Madison. Mitchellville Warden Patty Wachtendorf will replace him when he retires in just a few days on January 30th. And we have the good fortune of having Nick Ludwig, Warden Ludwig, join us for the entire first half of the program. Warden Ludwig, so good to have you. Thank you for joining us.
I appreciate the opportunity, Ben. Thank you for having me.
Just to remind our listeners, the Iowa State Penitentiary in Fort Madison dates back to the 1800s. Nearly 1,000 inmates, some 500 staff members. It houses Iowa's most dangerous male offenders. I hope this is okay. I want to spend the bulk of the time we have, 20 minutes, Warden Ludwig, talking about having you reflect on your time in corrections. But a few things in the news, if I could get brief answers to those or reactions to those. We had the new agreement with Governor Branstad and the legislature on budget cuts announced yesterday. The Iowa Department of Corrections operating Iowa's prisons is looking at a much less drastic cut. It had faced a spending reduction of $15 million. Now it's been reduced to just over, well, $5.5 million. A big sigh of relief, I imagine.
It's not uncommon for us as administrators to face budget deficits throughout the fiscal year, Ben. So those talks are still ongoing with regard to the total impact they'll have on the agency and the respective facilities and community-based corrections. Until such time as I would have more information, I'm really not at liberty to discuss in any detail. It is, as I mentioned, it is a ongoing practice as an administrator to always work to manage your annual appropriation to the best of your abilities and be prepared for the potential for any cuts throughout the course of the year.
Mm-hmm. You've hosted me. I visited the old facility and the brand new facility that opened up in 2015. And we did talk then about the relationship between resources, money, personnel, and on the other side of the equation, safety and security. So maybe more generally to talk about that, you've got a new facility which can oversee the inmates with fewer people.
We've mentioned before during talks, I told you that any administrator in the nation, given the opportunity to ask for more staff, would probably say, sure, I would like some. But he or she would be wrong if they couldn't clearly articulate how they would specifically use them throughout the course of the day and on, among the three shifts. I am not of any concern at this point in time with regard to our ability to manage this population. Nor am I aware of any concern of any of my fellow peers, the other wardens throughout the agency.
Mm-hmm. Also in the news in the last few days, pretty much covered up by all the election news, but it was in the news that we learned that an inmate died in the penitentiary after he was beaten by a fellow prisoner in what's believed to be the first homicide at an Iowa prison since 2010. Iowa actually has a really good record on this, near the bottom of the national list for homicides of state prisoners, reporting only one between 2001 and 2014. But on this case, according to documents obtained by the Associated Press under the Open Records Law, this fatal attack in October continued despite a corrections officer's commands for the assailant to stop. The inmate who died, Michael Whitworth, he died on October 30th. What can you tell us about what happened?
Situations like that, unfortunately, can occur in a correctional environment. In that particular instance, something that began as a fight escalated into a much worse situation. That is still subject to prosecution. So as far as any extensive detail, I'm not at liberty to discuss that. Any institution in the country can have a graphic amount of violence on any given day, and it is it's a testament to the job that the staff do at the institutions that we don't have unfortunate situations like that happen on a more frequent basis.
Mm-hmm. During my visits to the penitentiary, you talk a lot about the vibe at the prison, and it's definitely related to this and the good the relatively good statistic here about the relatively few homicides for state prisoners. Explain what you mean by the vibe at a prison, at your prison.
What I was referring to was the feel, if you will. I've mentioned to you that when you walk inside an institution, anyone with any corrections experience, and very, very likely yourself when you walked in, you didn't feel tension. There's two types of quiet in a prison, only one of which is acceptable, because the term the calm before the storm is pretty realistic. When there's something that may happen in an institution, you can feel the tension. In this particular institution, what I was referring to was the absence of tension, the interaction between offenders and other offenders, the interaction between staff and offenders, our ability to program the offenders without any conflict, the ability for people to traverse the institution as you were allowed to without being bothered or without feeling threatened in my presence. That's what I'm talking about when I refer to the vibe. Every institution, you can determine when you walk inside how well managed that institution is, because you can detect any tension and or lack thereof.
Mm-hmm. Are there specifics attached to that vibe, or is it just really a feeling that you get? I certainly got that. It seemed very relaxed when I visited the penitentiary both times. Are there red flags that you can point to in terms of specifics, or is it really just sort of the tension you feel in the air that can't be described more specifically?
There are different management flags that we could look at if the men who live here start to order an awful lot more canteen store goods than they normally would. That's one method where we can detect that there's tension. If we see specific groups that no longer talk to each other, don't communicate, and or start to separate on the yard, there's another means of being able to identify potential problems. If people start to not come out for time to go to the food service building. And I've mentioned to you that the food service building is the most critical area of operations in any institution, because three times a day your entire population, your entire general population, can go through there. If guys decide not to go out there, that's also easy to identify. So there's several facets and factors that we use to identify tension and or lack thereof in an institution. And all of them are very beneficial as far as our preparation for anything that could go awry.
If you just joined us, my guest this half hour live, Nick Ludwig, Iowa State Penitentiary Warden, for another few days. He's retiring at the end of this month. Join us with your questions, 1-866-780-9100. My last visit to the state penitentiary in 2015, this is your new facility. I was also at the old one, which predates the state of Iowa in the 1800s. A number of technical issues burdened the opening of the new facility, complicated the transfer from the old facility to the new. When I visited, there was still one part of the new facility that wasn't up and running. So at this point now, in 2017, is everything completely settled, all facets up and running of the new facility?
All facets are up and running. Your maintenance department in an operation of this size is always busy working to ensure that all systems continue to run adequately and appropriately, whether it's your ventilation system, your heating and cooling. We have a large amount of freezers, obviously, for our food service. As far as answering your question, yes, everything is up and running now. It took some time for us to iron out some of the problems, but I have a very good maintenance crew here who've worked very diligently to get this institution where we need it to be.
Mm-hmm. Is your staff adapted to the new surroundings? Because we talked, and the design is vastly different than a 19th century prison with the dark corridors and the high stairways that we might think connect with Hollywood movies about prison. This is a vastly different looking prison on the interior. And to go along with that, a vastly different approach to overseeing offenders, right?
Yes, it is, Ben. It's called a direct supervision approach, also a unit management approach. Unit management is not a new concept. Unit management actually goes back to the 60s, Robert F. Kennedy Youth Center. Basically, it implies that Frequent interaction with smaller groups of offenders allows you to elicit a desired response more effectively than working with a, giving example, the giant cell blocks down at the other institution. These smaller pods we have are designed to allow that corrections officer to be able to see the front of every door, to work with a smaller number of offenders. I expect my corrections officers to know everybody in their specific pod. Nobody answers to, hey, you in a prison. And that style, a very, very drastic difference, I might add, from the style we had at the fort, whereby an individual could basically sit on a chair and knock on a window and say, go down to your cell. Was not for everybody initially when we moved. We had a number of senior staff who were uncomfortable making the transition and opted for retirement rather than making the move to the new institution and accepting this new management concept. The staff who are here now, I'm very proud of the manner in which they have adapted and especially the manner in which they communicate on an ongoing basis with the offender population.
I'd like to have you reflect on your very long career, over four decades in corrections, Warden Ludwig. What achievement are you most proud of to date?
I've had some wonderful mentors throughout the course of my career. I've taken advantage of some opportunities that were provided me in the Michigan system prior to coming here. I was involved in moves of thousands of offenders. One large move involves sending 1,555 offenders out of state for an 18-month period. I had the opportunity to coordinate that. That was a very interesting time in my career. Upon completion of that successful operation, I was appointed to a warden position of the mail reception center of the big prison in Jackson, Michigan. Did a lot of construction there, changed that facility, set a lot of systems in place, worked there 7 years, absolutely loved the place, left there and managed two institutions prior to coming here, two 1,226-bed institutions that sat directly adjacent to one another. I've been asked if I have any regrets in my career, and my answer was yes, I have one, and that is that I didn't come to Iowa sooner. This experience has been that positive of an experience for me.
What sets it apart from your previous experiences, that it's so much better or that you wish you were here sooner?
The opportunity to move this institution in the direction that it needed to go, to prepare staff. Now, mind you, the career in Michigan helped me do that. Giving an example, when I started in corrections in Michigan, there were 5 facilities. When I retired, there were 43. So I was very accustomed to opening, closing, converting institutions. And then seeing the job application for the fort, my resume mirrored what needed to be done here. Change the culture of an institution, prepare people for the move, actually conduct the move, open a new institution, establish the culture at the new institution. Those are all things that fortunately I've had a lot of experience in throughout the course of my career. And I started as a corrections officer. I tell a lot of people I think that's the best way to begin your career in corrections. I do not begrudge anyone who does not begin as a corrections officer, but when you learn what it's like to turn a key, when you learn what it's like to work directly with the offenders on a day-to-day basis, it puts you in a better position to be a supervisor, a manager, an administrator of one of these institutions.
Do you remember your first day coming to the state penitentiary in Iowa? Did that make an impression on you?
Yeah, yes, I do. I remember it very, very clearly. I had a chance to walk inside, and when I walked inside, I came around the corner of the kitchen, and there was a group of offenders sitting on a steel bench affixed to the wall of the kitchen, and I asked them if that's where the chief executive officers hung out, and they laughed, and they said, "Yeah, this is your world. We just live in it. Go ahead and have a seat." So I did. It shocked them, and I think it shocked some staff, just at the comfort of interacting with the offenders. That was a way that I used to train people that if I'm comfortable walking and talking in an institution, I expect all of my staff to mirror the same.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit more about this, because this is a real key to your leadership and the vibe that you have brought to the state penitentiary. your relationship with offenders. What do you want? Describe that relationship with an offender. What do you want to establish? What lines do you want to draw? What signals do you want to communicate?
Here's a real important note for people who listen to something like this for the first time as far as a prison. I never forget the fact that my guys have victims. But as a warden and as an administrator of an institution, I can't judge an individual by what he or she did. Their sentence is the punishment. Our jobs are very akin to mayors of a community. And as a mayor of a community, you want things to go well for the people that live within the community. Now, I'll give you an example here. Over half of my men are serving life sentences. What I want them to do is know that by virtue of them serving a life sentence, we're not just going to leave them alone and prohibit them from involvement in programming opportunities and or extending some type of effort to improve their situation. It gets back to that a better citizen of the community. You've heard me use the community term again. I'll give you an example. When I knew I was leaving, I called out 30 of the most influential lifers we have here. And all their past said was a meeting with the warden. We met in the school, and I had every ethnic group represented. Many of the guys, 20, 30, 40, one individual had been here 60 years. And I talked with them, and I said, I'm leaving. I've been straight up with you guys since I arrived. I want you to know that I'm leaving. I want you to know that I expect you to support my replacement as much as you've supported me. I challenge them to manage adversity. I challenge them to manage change. I thank them for their behavior while I was here. Those are the type of relationships that you need to establish as a warden, because we have the daily interaction with the guys who live here. There's a mutual coexistence between staff and the offenders. And that's something I've worked very hard to establish during my time in Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Were you satisfied with their reaction of those 30 individuals when you told them?
Very much so. They were highly appreciative that they had been called in. There were guys who cut into me afterwards saying, why wasn't I one of the 30? It meant an awful lot to them, and it meant an awful lot to me to have the opportunity to say, you need to continue to do the right thing. You need to continue to coexist here. I know things are going to happen in a prison. We're a when environment. We're not an if environment. We understand that, but the meeting went very well, and they were highly appreciative of the opportunity to part company.
Mm-hmm. Did I understand you correctly? They were wondering why you weren't among the 30, one of the 30. Could you have been an offender behind bars in different circumstances?
No, that's not what I meant, Ben.
Sorry.
Other offenders asked why they weren't.
I see.
Involved in one of the 30.
When I visited you at the Iowa State Penitentiary, you were very open about some of your health problems. I see those are also in the news, in the Burlington paper, for instance. Is that part of your reason for retiring?
It is my reason for retiring, yes. My health care providers at Mayo Clinic, upon discovering 5 new tumors, I do have stage 4 melanoma. I've had it for some time. They said that it was time for me to go home and play, and as a matter of fact, I'm sitting in the office here next to me is my beautiful wife, Larry Ann, so I'm looking forward to doing just that. I don't like ending my career this way, but I've donated a tremendous amount of energy in my time here in corrections with a 42-year career, and it's time to reciprocate and donate that same amount of time and effort to my beautiful wife and my lovely children and my family and friends.
Mm. We wish you all the best. What advice would you, I think you have been showing Patty Wachtendorf the rope, so to speak, even though she has a great deal, of course, of experience herself, specifically about the state penitentiary. What ropes are you showing her specifically?
Patty doesn't need an awful lot of introductions. While we were walking around the other day, 2 weeks ago, we spent a couple days traversing the institution, and there were a number of offenders who approached Patty and said, you said you'd be back, and you said you'd be back as a warden, and here you are. So when she worked here previously, she already had a clear career path in her mind, and now that has come full circle. She and I have a very similar management style as far as the walking and talking, the spending time with staff, calling people by their names, knowing something personal about everyone that you work with, knowing the offenders, challenging the offenders. There's really not much I can tell Patty other than the fact that once I'm gone, she can actually say she's managing the number one institution in the state. Now, I say that because she had a new institution at Mitchellville and, of course, the new institution in Fort Madison. Former Director Baldwin pitted us against each other in a competition as to who was number one. So I always call her number two, and she always calls me number two. And I told her when I leave the state, she can finally actually say unequivocally that she's managing the number one institution in the state.
When you look back, we have just a minute or so left, Warden Ludwig, when you look back over your distinguished career of over four decades in corrections, what do you want to most be remembered for?
Leaving every place I worked a little bit better than it was when I arrived there, as a result of spending the amount of time developing those relationships with staff and offenders. You teach people in that process. It's risky when you give as much of yourself as I and some of my peers do in our management styles, but there's a tremendous reward when you see other people start to emulate that, walk and talk with offenders, comfortable as they traverse the institution. So leaving each place a little bit better than it was when I arrived would be what I would like to be remembered as.
In the next 10 to 20 years, we only have 30 seconds, what are the biggest changes and challenges you see facing corrections in this country?
You're going to see more privatization attempts. You're going to see more focus on evidence-based programs. That's a positive. And then you're going to see more community. You know, there may have to be some changes in sentencing guidelines. There's an awful lot of prisons everywhere. They may have to do something politically to reduce the count in each state's prison population.
Okay. Warden Nick Ludwig, thank you so much. Thank you again for granting us the visits you have in past years. And for this conversation, Warden of the Iowa State Penitentiary in Fort Madison, now retiring, it's been a great pleasure to know you and to continue these conversations. Thank you very much, Warden Ludwig.
Thank you, Ben. I appreciate it.
Coming up in just a moment, a new report from the Iowa Policy Project finds the repeal of the Affordable Care Act could leave 230,000 Iowans without health care. That's including 25,000 children. We'll talk with the author of that report when we come back. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.